From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. It's no secret that Lane County has a homelessness problem. It seems like each year we see more and more people living unhoused. And since a critical court case that first began here in Oregon was adjudicated at the Supreme Court, many aspects of homelessness have been deemed criminal. Today on the show, we talk to a U of O professor who's an expert on homelessness. She'll talk about the myths around the unhoused, the root causes in our community, and the potential solutions. To that end, she believes all the resources are in place to end homelessness in our region, but what's truly lacking is political will. It's a difficult discussion, but one that we as a community need to have in order to move forward towards a better future. That's next on Oregon on the Record. Sure, it's easy to see and interact with people who are living unhoused here in Eugene, but as my guests will explain, there's no place in Lane County where the problem of homelessness is not ever present and how we as a society are making it a crime to live unsheltered. Claire Herbert, an associate professor in the Department of Sociology at the University of Oregon, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, you write about, you teach about issues around homelessness. And I think I wanted to start with this question, which is simply, you know, are there myths around homelessness or being homeless that maybe as a society we kind of buy into and we're thinking the wrong things?
Yes. Okay. That's a great question to start with. One of the most common myths that I think is a real obstacle to making progress ending homelessness is the idea that people want to be homeless, that they choose to be unhoused. And we have a lot of survey data that shows that overwhelmingly people do not want to be homeless. But sometimes people who are unhoused might not accept an offer of a shelter bed because that particular shelter might not be a good fit for their needs.
Sure.
And so we end up using that as a way to say, well, they are resistant to services or they want to be unhoused.
Yeah. And I imagine, too, people who are homeless who might be suffering from mental health challenges, they may be very fearful of anybody coming up to them and saying, hey, do you need help?
Absolutely. This is also a population that has a lot of what we call institutional trauma. They've had a lot of challenging, difficult, bad experiences with people in positions of authority, whether it's police or even, you know, doctors at the ER or even, you know, EMS personnel. And so this is also why street outreach teams or folks like CAHOOTS, you know, are really, really important for helping serve this population because they can really build the kind of trust that we need to build in order to be able to sort of reach across the divides that have been created over time for these folks and help them trust that there is help available, that they're not going to be sort of coerced, forced, and, you know, to kind of help them move through some of those traumatic experiences.
Yeah. I know, and I've talked to people about a difference, perhaps, between, as you talked about, people who are homeless, and there are people who I think that the term is travelers, and they might be young people that are kind of, at least to the uninitiated, you know, might be, oh, well, they're embracing this lifestyle of being homeless. And a lot of times people almost elevate that population and say, well, see, there you go. Those are folks that choose this lifestyle. Yep. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I think that's also a kind of a population that we might be more familiar with in a place like Eugene.
Okay.
Where, you know, we kind of have it's countercultural history that has embraced alternative lifestyles.
Sure.
And, you know, I've even heard, you know, folks who have lived in Eugene for a long time mention being used to sort of the seasonal fluctuations of vans with the country fair, for example.
Sure.
Right? and there is also, you know, trending on TikTok or whatever, are these, you know, the van life, you know, movement, which I think during the pandemic escalated even more so, right, and became more kind of popular. And that kind of bleeds into folks who are living unhoused because they have no other alternative versus people who are kind of embracing it as a lifestyle and saying, I don't want a ton of possessions. I want to roam. I want to be free. Sure. I want to experience the world. The obstacle, I think, is that sometimes folks who are kind of traveling around and who have some agency in deciding to live that way become part of a narrative that says that people come to Eugene because it's a great place to be homeless. And this is something that we researchers call the magnet theory.
Okay.
That if you provide services, they will come.
Okay.
As though because Eugene has built up a decent number of services for the unhoused, that it draws people here. With that kind of idea, we're actually conflating folks who sometimes just move around. And people who are unhoused move too,
yeah.
Just like people who are housed.
Sure.
But there's also not a lot of data to back up the magnet theory.
Okay,
either.
Okay. Let's talk about criminalization of homelessness. I mean, yeah. I think people probably are genuinely confused. I mean, is it illegal to not have a home? And is that an actual statute or is that more of a norm or something like that?
Yeah, so it is not illegal to be homeless, to be unhoused. But what is increasingly criminalized across the country is doing anything that you need to survive outside in public spaces.
Yeah.
So this is, these are where these court cases have been battling this for a decade or so now. More explicitly, at least. And what it's really centering on is that, when folks don't have a place to live, when they don't have a shelter bed to sleep in or temporary housing or a regular home, they have to sleep somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Where are they supposed to sleep? Oftentimes, this means that folks are sleeping on public property because it's much harder to gain access to private property.
Sure.
Easier for the property owner to trespass them and get the police to come and move them off. There's also the fact that you need somewhere to sit and eat your food.
Mm-hmm.
And you need somewhere to just sort of rest and spend time. But it also means that you have all of your things with you because you have nowhere to store them. And so we have, over the last 20 plus years, a lot of these ordinances started along the West Coast. We call them quality of life ordinances. They kind of arose with attempts at gentrifying sort of downtown spaces and drawing people back into urban areas, and these were regulations that attempt to kind of control the activities that poor or unhoused people are doing as they spend time in public space, including like even sitting or lying on sidewalks, for example. And what it is trying to do is kind of make sure these spaces are desirable to patrons, right, who are going to come to downtown areas and shop and things like that. And these are ways of trying to sort of move out what are viewed as quote unquote undesirable populations.
I see.
But what's happening, right, is that then we are, even though the status of being unhoused is not in and of itself a crime, we are criminalizing all of the behaviors and activities that are necessary to support life when they're done in public spaces because people don't have anywhere private to retreat to.
Got it. Let me quickly reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking to Clara Herbert. She is an associate professor in the Department of Sociology at the U of O. Is it, especially in when you look at like Lane County or a metro area such as ours, multiple cities, a county structure, is it, and I almost hate to use this analogy, but kind of like whack-a-mole. It's like one municipality might say, no, I want to move these folks out.
Uh-huh.
And they go, I mean, obviously, most of them don't have transportation to be able to go much farther.
Mm-hmm.
And so they might go to Springfield or they might go to Cottage Grove. Is that kind of a situation where we have this forced movement where we're not solving a problem? We're just simply shifting people around.
Absolutely. And that happens on different scales as well. And so One of my big sort of frustrations, I mean, there are multiple, with the Supreme Court overturning Grants Pass versus Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Grants Pass versus United States now.
Yes.
Is that...
And that was the camping ban, right?
Yes.
Okay.
is that they said, well, the court said municipalities don't have to criminalize homelessness. It's up to them, right? That we need to leave this up to the decision of local authorities to decide how to best address it. But if everywhere around you criminalizes homelessness, then it is possible that it's going to push folks to spaces where they actually have somewhere to be, right? Mm. Without constantly being under the threat of arrest. So it is suggesting that, like, that it, the Supreme Court could actually sort of promote the movement of unhoused people by allowing some places to criminalize it, even if others don't want to.
Hmm.
The other thing that happens is in a place like, you know, Lane County, Eugene and Springfield is the largest metro area in the middle of the state. So we do have more services here, right? And so because there's not a ton of services in Cottage Grove, or as you move east across the Cascades, it does mean that when people need help, the services are concentrated in these metro areas.
Sure.
And that to me suggests that we need to be doing a better job of making sure that smaller towns and rural places have the services to provide to their populations to make sure that folks who live there are able to get the help that they need.
I have talked to lots of people mm-hmm. about the issue of homelessness, mm-hmm. lots of nonprofits, political leaders, and whatnot. I mean, from your perspective, studying this, what are we doing well, and what are the biggest obstacles mm-hmm. to solving this problem? And I'll even ask this as part of this question. Is it something we can
mm-hmm.
solve?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'll start with the last one there. Okay. So I teach housing and homelessness pretty frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to tell my students that unlike some other social problems that we might address in a sociology class, we actually really know how to solve homelessness.
Hmm.
We don't have the political will to get it done. So we have decades of research, really what we call like good quality research that is long-term, that uses control groups, that shows us what happens when we use one kind of intervention versus another. And we need to sort of mobilize the resources and the sort of time and energy to enact these best practices, which really center on housing first,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, very reductively is the idea that when folks are in housing, you need to just get them into housing as quickly as possible.
Okay.
One, because a lot of problems compound when you live outside. A lot of folks in Eugene, for example, start using substances to navigate the hardships of living outside. They may not have used substances before. Their health problems get worse when you live outside. I mean, just life becomes immensely more difficult. So the faster we can move folks inside, the better.
Mm-hmm.
But then we also know that the stability that housing provides, long-term, safe, not congregate shelter, but like housing that provides privacy,
mm-hmm.
Those kinds of situations really provide people the opportunity to address the other obstacles that are going on in their life, like getting chronic health issues under control, or making it to appointments with counselors to address mental health problems and things like that. I forgot what your first question.
Well, the question is what are some of the things we do well, and then of course what are the biggest challenges?
Some of the biggest challenges is particularly in Eugene is our housing market.
Yeah.
So there are some sort of debates raging right now, interesting ones, about whether or not our problem is simply a lack of housing across the country. And some research that some presentations I've heard recently at conferences suggest that in some places it's not quite about literally not having enough units of housing, but that the units of housing available are not a fit for the population in need of housing. Right. They cost too much.
Sure,
essentially.
Sure.
However, interestingly, in this particular analysis, there were two cities west of the Cascades that literally did not have enough units of housing available for the population that was unhoused, and one of them was Eugene, which, to my understanding, maps on.
Sure, sure.
So building affordable housing is incredibly important.
Yeah.
And I think that one thing we are not doing well in Eugene and other places is we're spending a lot of time and resources. This is the other scale of the whack-a-mole question, right? We're spending a lot of time and resources moving folks around, which actually undermines our ability to help people move into housing. So I've talked with outreach workers and case managers who are like, this person finally made it to the top of the wait list and it's time for them to move in and I can't find them because the last place they were camping got swept and now they've moved. And we are paying, we're spending a lot of money and we are devoting a lot of manpower to moving around folks who are living outside. Oftentimes this is in response to, very, I think, understandable complaints by house residents. But collectively what that means is that we're kind of reproducing the problem, right? We're helping it continue rather than intervening in it.
Yeah. I'm wondering too, if I'm a city council person or a county commissioner or something, I'm going to get complaints from business people. Mm-hmm. In other words, that's a understandable and powerful constituency saying we have to do something about all these people showing up on my doorstep or whatnot. Homeless people don't necessarily have advocates to protest their grievances to city council. So is that one of the biggest problems, especially with regard to political will, is just that, the homeless people don't really have a voice?
I think that is perpetually a problem for folks who are unhoused as well as other marginalized, impoverished, vulnerable groups, right, is that it takes a lot of time, resources, energy to sort of, engage in advocacy for oneself, for one's community. And that's really, really hard when, it takes you 2 hours to find a place to sleep at night. And then maybe you get to sleep for 4 hours before you get up and move in an attempt to avoid someone noticing that you're there.
Yeah.
And so I think that, having community members and others who are willing to advocate for the rights of our unhoused community members is really, really important. I also think that it's important to prioritize having places for people to go so that they can stay there and not constantly be moved around. And I think Eugene has made some progress in that arena. I think there's some sort of complex or muddy legal, ethical sort of issues at play with the safe camping and safe sleep sites. But they seem to have, sort of gained support in Eugene because we were looking for an alternative to people not having a legal place to camp.
Mm-hmm.
This is something I've been, reading more and more about for my work. And it makes sense why Eugene has sort of embraced creating these alternative places for folks to camp. And I hope that we can figure out a way to kind of scale those up so that people have more of the resources that habitable housing provides in those locations. But, in the very immediate, they at least provide people with a place to go.
Yeah, yeah. Specifically here in Eugene, and I know in researching you, I know you wrote a paper about Cahoots. And I've also, sitting in the chair you're seated now was the chief of police one time. And he talked about the fact that I don't necessarily want my officers having to, I don't want to put a cop with a gun in direct, line of sight with someone who's homeless, who's experienced maybe a mental health challenge.
Yep.
They're not trained for that. And then, of course, Cahoots has been in retreat and maybe something can come back. But talk about that, how it
Absolutely.
Was great and we don't have it anymore.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because there's, there's a sort of a lot at stake right now, I think, with how we move forward as a community in terms of our alternative response. And, Cahoots, of course, has become a national model for, they actually have a lot of different names. I tend to call them alternative mobile crisis.
Okay.
And in some places, the Cahoots model, which particularly pairs a paramedic and someone with, I forget what it's called, qualified mental health
certification or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, exactly. And that model has been adopted in other places where they're specifically trying to figure out how to address the needs of folks who are living outside. So Kahoot's kind of, while Kahoot serves far more than our unhoused population or did, their particular approach and the reputation they established in the community and the kind of crisis services they were able to provide are a really good fit for folks who are living outside. Mm-hmm. And that I hear from many police officers that they similarly do not want to be doing this work, not because they don't care, but because they recognize they're not the best person to send out to this call about someone who is sleeping on the front step of a business. And so it's really about figuring out what does that person need and what kind of resources can we direct in that moment. And a lot of the time, police are not the best resources, and they have other things to be doing.
Sure,
very well aware of that.
Yeah. You have a seminar coming up that is open to the public that people can learn more about this issue. Talk about it. It's happening this week, February 12th, I believe.
Great. Yes. So the Wayne Morse Center is hosting a panel discussion called Unhoused, and we're inviting a sociologist named Chris Herring, who's at UCLA. Mm-hmm. And he'll be doing a short presentation, and then he and I will be having a panel discussion moderated by Dr. Joe Weaver, who's in global studies at University of Oregon. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be talking about some of the commonalities and differences in criminalization in small cities and big cities. And, you know, a lot of the research on homelessness historically has focused on this, you know, on LA and San Francisco and New York. But as we all know very, very well here in Eugene, is that smaller cities and now even rural places are also struggling with homelessness and figuring out what to do in the wake of Grant's Pass decision and how are we going to regulate camping and things like that in public spaces. And so we're going to be diving into some of those questions. And it is free to attend in person, or you can also watch via Zoom online.
I'll put a link on our website.
Awesome.
Claire Herbert, thank you so much. She's the associate professor in the Department of Sociology at the University of Oregon. Really appreciate all your comments and insights.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow on the show, we'll talk to the Oregon Food Bank about the state of hunger in our state. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.